Montana. This is September 12th, 2006. Will be interviewing Clifford Vaughn, a World War II veteran, and the interview is taking place at his home. Would you please kind of tell us a little bit what you were doing before World War II and what happened and how you got into the military and how things got started for you?
Well, I was working my way through college at the time, and then I during the school year, I was an ROTC, so in June of 1941, I graduated from Montana State College, and then and on September 12th, I was in the Army.
You already were in the September 12th?
September 12th was in the Army before Pearl Harbor.
1941, September 12th. Well, you also played football for the Bobcats, too, in
1941. Yes, I played football, started the first year in 1936, and at that time, freshmen weren't allowed to play in a pro an alumni team, and then I had to stay out of the year working, and then I went back to re-enrolled and played in 38, 39, and 40.
Oh, that's neat. Okay, so you were inducted then into the Army September 11th, 1941.
Yeah.
So where did you get your assignment? You were second lieutenant then.
Yes, yes. I was assigned. It was an interesting thing. They knew that I was going to, my dean of Dean knew I was going to be in the Army, and he let me take an awful lot of credits, and I think I just passed in the door and out because he knew I wouldn't be around much longer. And
Rick, that wasn't uncommon for a lot of young men at that time, was it? They kind of moved them through some of their courses pretty fast.
Well, yes, and thankful for that. But, you know, it's interesting, I thought back since that, how important it was that I got that degree from Montana State and the rest of my life. But at the time I got it, it was just a passing thing.
Uh-huh.
And then, as I said, I went in the Army in September the 12th, and I reported to Camp Roberts, California. And little did I know where Camp Roberts was. And when I drove down the street, I went on the left side, and that was that wasn't Camp Roberts that I was looking for. So you can imagine a stranger looking in a big in the Camp Roberts to go ahead and get into the Army.
That was probably your first time in California too, wasn't it?
Yes, the first time I was ever in California.
Mm-hmm. So you found the camp and got assigned and billeted okay then?
Yeah, it was Camp Roberts was basic training, mm-hmm. And they were coming in by the thousands, and I was in the Army for a little while, and so they were calling reserve officers in, and there were first lieutenants and captains and second lieutenants, and they gave me assignment to bring these officers up to date. And some of those lieutenants would come up to me and, sir, or a captain would say, sir. I said, wait a minute now, you're in the Army, I'm only a second lieutenant. But I enjoyed trying to help them out because I knew, how I felt when I first got in there at big post.
Well, sure. And, of course, you had good ROTC training.
Oh, yes.
How did you happen to sign up for ROTC?
Well, of course, I don't know. Of course, you had 2 years.
Sure, then you had mandatory.
But I don't know. I thought it probably was a thing to do.
You kind of liked it, so you did it, huh?
A lot of my buddies in the football team were in the National Guard,
mm-hmm.
because there wasn't anything as scholarships in those days.
No.
And so a lot of them was in the National Guard, and in 1940, they called the National Guard in, and our football team left. There was 19 of us that finished the season.
Oh, boy.
so.
Well, so you kind of got started, and you oriented other people as they were coming in. And this was prior to Pearl Harbor then, you know, in 1921. This was after Pearl Harbor. After Pearl Harbor came in. You went in September, and then after Pearl Harbor, they really brought them in. Yeah, they were calling them in after the Pearl Harbor.
Right, okay.
So you you were kind of the orientation officer.
Yes.
Guard people and everything. Well, how long did you do training at Camp Roberts?
Well, I'm not sure exactly. I was about 3 months there, I imagine. Mm-hmm. And actually, I had a little experience there. I don't know why they picked on me, but I took the first 500 troops up to Fort Lewis after the war was declared. Mm-hmm. And it was, I had a little experience there. When I checked out at Fort Lewis about the equipment I had, and and when I got back to the post, why, about a month or so later, I got a letter from the sergeant saying I owed $500 for equipment. And I said, you know, knives and everything like that. I said, Captain, or Sergeant, I says, you know, I turned all that stuff in. I think I finally paid up for 2 butcher knives. those were the days.
Yeah. But they were moving so fast, I don't know how they could keep track of something. Yeah.
And then, about 3 months later it was, I was assigned to Camp Cook, California. And Camp Cook, California, we were assigned to a tank destroyer battalion. Mm. And actually, that was the first time we ever had anything to do with a West Point graduate. Oh. And he was assigned to the tank destroyer battalion, but he was really a gung-ho guy. And we went up to Fort Lewis to get a bunch of vehicles. And we came down from there with that. I thought we'd never get back to camp because he did it by the rules. You go so fast, but we finally got back to the boat. But anyway, he was, like I said, a very gung-ho guy. And he gave us the name of Goya, G-O-Y-A. And I don't know, you may not want to put this on the note, but he called it, get off your ass.
Yeah.
Right. So that was our battalion motto, good after fact. Yeah, and of course, the tank destroyer battalion was seek, sight, and destroy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, then we got our colonel to work for. So from then on, it was working. And we were there at Camp Cook for quite a while. And then we went to Fort Hood, Texas. That was the home base of the tank destroyers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you, as lieutenant, then you commanded a company then?
Oh, I wasn't, though. No. I was a platoon leader.
You were a platoon leader then?
Platoon leader, yes.
Mm-hmm. So you went to Fort Hood, to the home base, and then would you guys do some more training there?
Yeah, then when we started getting the equipment in, and also when we were at camp, at Camp Cook, we... The general on the base there said that the officers had to do all the training. So it was interesting to see that one time we had a great meeting for everybody, and the general had to read the notes of what he was going to say to us. But anyway, it was interesting. And also, that one day I got a terrible toothache, and I turned the platoon over to the sergeant, went across to the dentist chair, to the dentist, and this young man was there, and I got up in the chair, and he said to his friend, what do I do now? What do I do now? What do I do now? But anyway, that was the first experience I had with the military physicians.
In that early time period, did you have all the equipment you needed for your training program, or were you short of equipment and supplies?
Well, that was an interesting thing. We didn't have too much equipment there until we went to Muskogee, Oklahoma.
Mm.
And in Muskogee, Oklahoma, we were given what we called the M10 tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And we trained with those M10 tanks all that time. And then
we went from the from Muskogee, which was terribly hot, but we had a our colonel was a gung-ho guy. In fact, he lied to get into the First World War about his age,
so he could get in. So he could get in. He was really
a good guy. Yeah. But anyway, in Muskogee, it was a hot. But he got us in training, and so we would about three times we marched over to a town 25 miles away and picked and batched and went into the park and put up our tents. Mm-hmm. But it was about 105 or 6-7 degrees, and A Company was in the lead, and so it was so hot I didn't want to move them as fast. But this lieutenant with the recon company came by, and they passed me. They were laughing as, uh-huh. And well, we were picking. They were picking them up all the way with the big trucks.
After that, yeah, they had a little heat.
But we made three of those trips.
Oh my God!
But the thing was, I did the colonel. The colonel, excuse me. The colonel had our. The guys working in the office do that too, but it wasn't fair to them, you know, to be mm-hmm. to do that. So mm-hmm. a lot of them didn't quite make it.
No, they wouldn't be in condition enough to do that. And anybody who's had a march on a hot day.
In Muskogee is when they, colonel turned over the company to me and became a company commander.
Okay,
and the company commander, I had 12 3-inch guns mounted on those medium tanks, and quite a firepower, you know. They are the tank destroyer, or the tank man. What was his name?
The tank man. Let's see, not the commander, but
have any use for us tank destroyers? And because he said he had all the power he needed with his M10 tank and a 75 millimeter gun. Well, when we got overseas, he found out that that wasn't enough, and he needed a 90 millimeter gun. See, a 90 millimeter gun, the trajectory was flat, mm-hmm. and a 75, it was like a rifle.
Okay.
So it didn't have near. So, but anyway, when we started across France, our tank destroyer battalion led him across all the way.
So you were in Patton's third
Army, under Patton's command at the mm-hmm. time, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And but anyway, it was interesting. And also, after we left Muskogee, we went to Pilot Knob, California, just out of Yuma, and desert training. And believe me, it was desert. And but I had a cook, one of my mess sergeant. Was a chef actually in lifetime, and he could do more with powdered eggs than anybody I ever know.
Yeah, if he could do that, he is terrific.
he could do more with us. But anyway, then we went from Muskogee. We went out to Fort Dixon, from Yuma. We mm-hmm. went to Pilot Knob. We went to Fort Dix and waited there for our orders to go overseas.
When was that you went to Fort Dix?
1943.
Mm-hmm. To wait for your shipping out order. So you'd been training in the U.S. and quite some time.
But it was an interesting thing. When we got overseas, they gave us towed vehicles and with a 90 millimeter gun.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a big discussion. The big shots couldn't make up an agreement which was the better to have, a towed gun or a tank, because the tank was a bigger target.
Yeah.
So it was quite a discussion. But all the way across France and Germany, we were towed vehicles.
Hmm.
But when we got across the Rhine River, then they put us in tanks, and away we went.
Then you went fast, but
But
your biggest battles were before you got to the Rhine.
Yeah, right. But when we went to the one biggest the thing of us was after we got across France we were going towards Fort Belcroix. Fort Belcroix is in Metz, and that Fort Belcroix was beautiful cross. It had never fallen in 500 years of combat.
Yeah, I'll be dying all day.
So that night, my 12 guns laid 2,000 rounds of ammunition on the fort. And we had our tanks, we had two shells, armor-piercing, or an explosion shell. So, but anyway, we went up there and we captured the Metz, and the general said that he didn't. He said, "What chance do you have of fighting against men of iron?" And he would not surrender to our colonel. He had to surrender to the general.
He wanted it.
But but my company got the French Croix de Guerre with clusters for the Battle of Metz.
Oh, you did? Oh, great. Yeah. Now, what? Explain to us a little bit what those clusters and those awards mean.
Yeah, I don't know what all that meant, you know, but it was an honorary.
For doing that.
Then after we left Metz and we started north again, and of course for a few months, about a month there, we were in deep snow, about a foot deep. And then after that, it started raining, and we were still under Patton's command.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on Patton, the river was really high when we crossed, when the D-Day come. Mm-hmm. But regardless, we went across, started across the Moselle River.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, Patton was relieved by Ike because he made that terrible mistake.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So from then on, we were directly under Ike.
You were from there.
Yeah. And then the night we crossed the Rhine River, we didn't cross, but on the Rhine River, I had my guns lined up all along there, firing into Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And Ike and the Russian general and the English
one. Monty Montgomery?
The three of them were up there on the bridge. We could see them.
Is
and
that right?
Then that's as I say, we crossed there. Mm-hmm. Then they put us in those tanks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we could move right along with those tanks, but the English, they had to fire every shot. Every inch of the way with power, so we could have gone. We could have been into Berlin days before. But of course, the agreement was for those
Russians
to go. They were going to go first.
Yeah, they were going to.
And then they turned us instead of going into Germany. We went. They turned us and went south and that was the end of the war for
us. That was the end of the war. Now, were you involved in the Battle of the Bulge with the tanks? If you were with
Well, that's interesting. The Battle of the Bulge was before we crossed mm-hmm. the Moselle Rhine River. My company was in what you call St. Louis area, and I had my 12 guns, and each day I would take three or four guns down, fire direct, and the other eight guns would fire indirect at the same mm-hmm. time. And later, they thought that we had an armored artillery outfit.
No.
And we were pulled out of there then to go to working with the 101st Airborne to recover some equipment that a bunch of our people left.
No, yeah.
So we were working with the 101st, so we worked with many different divisions.
You had to shift around a lot then.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, we worked all the way across France, and there we worked with four different divisions, and we were never relieved once.
Mm.
But they kept changing the divisions.
They were on.
Yeah.
Well, now you were a company commander. Then you got promoted, weren't you? Battalion
yeah.
commander. Then.
Yeah, I was. No, in Muskogee. I was got to captain.
Captain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The bulge came through. The bulge came through where we were fighting,
mm-hmm.
and Betty's twin brother was killed in the bulge.
Years later, those kinds of things come back.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
And then after that, we're coming back, and we were in a cigar factory. Waiting to try. We were getting ready to go overseas again.
Again, yeah, you're
the other way.
You were going the other.
Yeah.
So well, now, in the kind of outfit you were in, tanks and that sort of thing, you have a lot of casualties then throughout going across Europe, or did that minimize?
Not. We were We, of course, we didn't land in Utah Beach.
No, no.
We were a few days later.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't. We were getting along very good. But one night, I had my five of them, my men, were in a Jeep on a night patrol, mm-hmm. and they hit a night bomb, killed all five of them.
No. Oh,
yeah. But you talk about our company being hit bad. It wasn't when we took Metz.
Mm-hmm.
When the Germans, I had a gun right here at the mm-hmm. end of the building, and the Germans walked right by with their hands over their heads, kind of smiling, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they got down clear to the way, and pretty soon all the infantry was along the edge of there, and they had set the dynamite on their ammunition dump, killed over several hundred infantrymen.
Oh, God.
I don't know how I got by.
Mm-hmm. Man, you were right.
That was that was a big
ooh, gee, that would be an awful sort of thing.
But that was it.
Mm-hmm. Well, then there's supply lines and everything. How did that work as you were moving with this armored group? Were the supply lines kept up with you in good shape?
Well, that night that we dropped 1,200 rounds of ammunition, 2,000 rounds of ammunition in Belcroix. Mm-hmm. I had my mess truck and every truck I had, vehicle I had,
carried ammunition. And as you guys went across, you slept mostly in tents?
No tents.
Or what did you use?
Outside or else in houses or so
forth. In houses once in a while as you moved across.
Yeah, but
you weren't in foxholes like the infantry guys were.
Yeah. And, you know, but the best, my men didn't like to, when we were working with the infantry, those dang infantrymen, they were, I guess I shouldn't say that, but they would go to the bathroom right in the house.
Yeah.
You know, and,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, that did bother my men quite a bit.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but, well, they were dead. They were in a different sort of an environment.
That's right.
A lot of the time.
But an interesting experience mm-hmm. I had when I was working with the 101st Airborne Division, they were out there killing chickens and everything. I went out there and stopped this one soldier, pulled a gun on him. Mm-hmm. I grabbed a gun out of his hand. I could have had him court-martialed, but I just mm-hmm. forget it.
Yeah, there was a lot of those bad things people did to the indigenous folks. Then how about the food? The food line that came up with you guys, were you eating rations?
The only time it held us up on anything, about halfway across France, we ran out of fuel.
Out of fuel.
So we were laid there for several days before we
get the fuel.
But otherwise, after that, oh gosh, we had, on Christmas that year, gee, we had a turkey and everything.
No, yeah, you had
it. We were in housing then.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Did you confiscate the housing from the people then, or did you, yeah, what kind of arrangements
they were,
did
they
you?
Were gone.
They were gone. They had abandoned houses.
They had gone, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you get into some of the grand old houses along the way?
I never went to, that didn't bother me. Like I said, my mission was this, and I wasn't Lieutenant Johnson getting details.
You just kept on getting it done then. Okay. Well, how about, you've referred to some of your other officers and everything. In general, how are your fellow officers and troops? They were a good gung-ho bunch, were they? Or they did you have some misfits in the group, or how did?
Well, no. Of course, I had four officers,
mm-hmm.
One for each of the platoons, and one of my assistant. Mm-hmm. My assistant. One of my assistants was a barber, and one day. I had him was cutting my hair somewhere along the way, and a great big bong landed right in the street right in front of us.
Oh, boy.
And it woke us up. But anyway, I had four good men, and one of my officers, whenever I had to, they gave me on another assignment for a mm-hmm, while, mm-hmm. he would take care of the
take
company.
Take care of everything, so... You guys had it, and you were able to stay together all the way across. Like the infantry people, they had to replace numbers quite often, I understand.
Oh, yeah. But, like I say, our outfit, that was mm-hmm. a terrible casualty when I lost those five men.
Oh, yes.
And I had they were really reasonable good people. Yeah.
And then you said you were. Where were you when VE Day was declared?
What?
When VE Day, when they declared peace or they signed the armistice?
Yeah.
What day? Where were you at when they said the war is over in Europe?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I think. I'm not sure that. I think we were just. No, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Not sure. Well, you were. But you guys were pretty happy when you heard that.
Oh man, yeah. Like when we were going, when we were advancing, the airplanes would go over. You know, give them hell, boys. We're on our way.
Yeah. Here we go. Well, then when it was over, then you got ready to go to Asia, but you never left Europe before.
Well, no. Then we got in our. And the pictures of our trip coming back shows it. Like that's when I was a police sanitation officer, and there's a picture of the guy, a lieutenant. He was an MP. He was sleeping.
He was sleeping. It's all over with now. It's different, huh? A little bit different. And then you were discharged. Right shortly after you got home?
They gave a month's leave.
They gave you a month's leave and
came
then back?
Then we reported to Fort Hood, Texas, and that's where we were.
They got discharged there.
But when they said go, I was already down the road 100 miles.
You were on your way.
But then when I was discharged, of course, I was promoted to a major.
I thought you were a major.
Yeah.
That was right at the time you got discharged.
During the war, I was a captain.
Mm-hmm. But you were in the standby reserves then for a while, but...
No.
You were all...
They didn't ask.
They didn't know they got... They didn't want to have any obligations.
Nothing. I said, like I said, go ahead. You want to turn that off?
Okay. Discharged then... You came back to Montana and got a job with the Extension Service?
That was very interesting. I went back to Whitehall, and I was just in my hometown, and I was just walking out the front the door of the hotel, and man came up to me, and he says, "You Brick Vaughn?" I says, "Yes, I'm Brick Vaughn." He says, "I understand you're looking for a job." I says, "That's right." And he says, "Have you ever considered extension?" I says, "What is it?" He says, "Well, do you like to work with young people?" And I says, "Oh, sure. My degree was in ag education." Mm-hmm. So he says, "Well, do you know Scotty Cameron?" And he was a state forest leader. Yeah. I said, "Sure, I knew Scotty because in the fraternity, if I couldn't pay the bill at the end of the month, I had to go see Scotty." So he and I were friends. Uh-huh. So that's when... That was my start.
Oh, that's how you got started with extension like that.
Yeah.
And then around, and you had a career of how many years with the Extension Service?
About just under 30.
Just under 30.
But I was about 10 years a county agent.
Yeah.
In Helena, and then the rest of the time in the
4-H office. And then.
Yeah.
But then you say you grew up in Whitehall. That's where you were born and raised.
Graduated in high school from
Whitehall. Huh?
Yeah.
Oh, darn. And you grew up on a farm there, then?
Oh, no.
Farm, no?
No. I lived wherever I could. I had a stepdad.
Okay.
And at Renova, one winter, we milked Herefords in order to make a living.
Oh, my gosh.
And then three bachelor guys, they kept me over one winter.
Mm-hmm.
That I was supposed to do chores for them,
mm-hmm.
but later I realized they just took me in. I didn't have chores to do. One year I spent the summer with Tom Toothaker, a veterinarian. but anyway, we got along. And one year, my stepdad moved into Butte to work in the mines.
Yeah.
Well, on. I sold papers, and I lived way out on the flat, and had to go up clear uptown
and
get papers two for a nickel.
Uh-huh.
You sell them a nickel apiece if you're lucky to sell them.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was terribly cold, it was too cold for me to walk clear home. So I stayed in the basement of the minor paper.
Okay.
And with a lot of other paper boys.
Oh, sure.
And the older paper boys, I was 7 years old then, mm-hmm. but it was I was just 7 years old, and they got us younger guys fighting until you proved yourself.
Oh,
so you had a lot of fight.
Oh, yeah.
But it was interesting when I left, when I was, before I went to Butte, I was living in a out in by Pleasant Valley, mm-hmm. and there was 10 of us in school and one teacher, mm-hmm. and all grades, and then 7 years old. Then we went into Butte to the Garfield School, which there was a 21-year-old guy in there, Chinaman, and of course you can see what that did to a 7-year-old
yeah.
kid. And I skipped school the rest of the year,
uh-huh.
and, but that was so I never had a farm to live
on. So you just kind of got
I just existed,
put together, but working around like that and everything that prepared you in lots of ways for your later work with the 4-H
oh, yeah.
people then too, didn't it?
Yeah.
Understanding of youth and that sort
oh,
of thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But so then you retired, you went to work with Simmental.
Simmental, yeah, but that wasn't my cup of tea.
That wasn't.
Then I worked for Simmental, or at engineering until I retired.
Until you took it all in. Okay, well, let me see. The war was coming on when you finished up with ROTC, and we weren't in the war yet, but
no.
What was your general feeling about what was going on at that time, and what kind of adjustment from being a civilian to being a military person?
Well, I don't know why, it didn't bother me any. Mm-hmm. You know, that was what I was assigned, you know, I chose to do. They didn't put me in the Army.
You chose that.
And it was an interesting thing. the lieutenant that was training us in ROTC, I came back to visit there, and I was a captain. He was still the second lieutenant. But within just a couple of months after that, he was transferred, and he was dead within 2 months.
Oh gosh, yeah. Those are kind of tough times. When you were in training and in all of these different locations in California and Oklahoma and everything, in your off duty, which I assume you didn't have much of, what did you do in your off duty time?
Well, what kind of things? The night of Pearl Harbor. We played poker the whole night long.
Is that right?
but we'd go take off to San Francisco or several places, you know, different
yeah.
places like that.
There was good train service to travel.
Right, right. And when we were in Fort Hood, Texas, I went to Austin quite a few
mm-hmm.
times.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you did. We're able to get there. How about Muskogee, Oklahoma? There's not much there.
Oh, no. There wasn't anything in Muskogee.
No.
They had an officer where you couldn't get liquor, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we were assigned a man to train our tank destroyer,
mm-hmm.
engineering and so mm-hmm. forth. And he and I were pretty good buddies. And one night, we drove into, Kansas? Overnight, we got there just at midnight, went into the liquor store, and I bought a case of whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
A case.
Both cases. so you could get back.
We just barely made it in time.
To dry Oklahoma.
But I got rid of that in a quick hurry.
That's right. Well, as an officer, all the way through, you had the officer's quarters, then did you have a room by yourself? Did you have a share room with two? You didn't have barracks like the enlisted men.
Well, it was anything. Let's go to Muskogee.
Let's do Muskogee.
It was so hot there at night, uh-huh. In the day. The men would go outside and sleep on the ground and so forth,
mm-hmm.
but we couldn't do that, so we had to stay in the barracks.
And sweat it out.
And sweat it out, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You guys, when I was in the Army, of course, I was a PFC and corporal, you know, in Korea, so I was always envious of those officers. They had nice quarters.
Yeah.
But ours was passable, too.
It wasn't that we made million. We had to buy our own uniforms and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's right. You and your pay wasn't that great.
Oh, no, no.
And you was
of course, it was more than $30 a month, but
yeah,
still.
But still.
You buy all your uniforms and cleaning frills and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and you so, okay. Get a chance when you were in Europe to meet very many of the local civilians and Europeans, or you mostly, you given the outfit you had, you didn't have that interaction.
Didn't have anything to do with anybody.
Did you meet up with any of the Russians when it was over with?
No.
You
no,
didn't
no.
meet with them. So no. You're not like Jim Crawl, where they met each other, right? Face to face with guns bristling, huh? okay. For some of the young people involved with this to know a little bit about the transportation you had at that time. Railroads were a real key transport during World War II, is that true? And transportation, the kind of transportation, communications, telephones were not what they are today, of course.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, we had our radio, mm-hmm. and I had a tech sergeant and staff and sergeant with that ran the TV, but the railroad. We'll talk about this thing. When we left Muskogee, the colonel had me on a special assignment, and mm-hmm. so I didn't go into Fort to Metz, Pilot Knob with the crew. I came in on the train, and found one of our trucks, and went out to Pilot Knob, and I got a cold. And the colonel says, you go see a doctor. I went and saw the doctor. He put me in the tent, and the dust was blowing up over there. I said, I'd never go back to Metz. I've been going back there 25
years now. Yeah, going back home now.
And people say, do you like it? I said, well, you must. I said, well, we go back 25 years now.
It must be. That says something.
They, of course, if you didn't have to worry about it, they would send you there, make your arrangements and all that stuff.
All that kind of good stuff, So you used radios mostly in your outfit. The field telephones were used by infantry people more in World War II?
We never...
You didn't use that. You didn't use that, that sort of thing, so... You moved that across, so I think that's one of the things that's interesting nowadays to a lot of people is the difficulty in understanding about communications, what it was like 50 years ago versus what it is today, and the instantaneous we have now.
For years and years, we go to an army, we have a reunion.
Reunion every
year. They still have them, but I don't go. Our general, our colonels would stay in in the army after we retired, and he would got to be a general, and he was 101 lackey one day.
Oh,
he used to go to all the reunions. Oh, he was a great guy.
Well, when did you start going to the reunions?
It's an interesting thing. They never found me until about 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And the mail was. It went to my stepsister in Jefferson Island, and then it went to Whitehall. So they finally caught up to me. But they kept, they don't follow you up with the mail anymore.
No, like they used to.
And so we went to the first one in 1980 in San Francisco. Then we went to everyone after that. And Betty and I hosted the one at Yellowstone in 1982.
Right.
And we had one of my men, one of my big tank drivers, a great guy, about 6'3", a big boy. He came up to me one day. He says, "Brick or Captain?" He says, "No, I can't read." All right, but he was quite a driver, and he was in the CCCs at Lake.
At Lake.
So when he came to Montana, he brought 10 people with him to see where he worked at Lake. He was a great guy, but he married a school teacher, so he could
learn how to read, right.
Yeah.
How many people came to your reunion when you had a Yellowstone?
There, we probably would get 100 and over 100, uh-huh. and we'll weigh 150, 200. Mm-hmm. But now, this two years, the last year I went, there were 10 of us, and four of them were in wheelchairs.
Uh huh.
But I can't. I don't travel anymore. I don't even like to.
Just get the human and back. That's good enough.
That's a job for me.
Is that right? Yeah. So you still had kept in touch with people that long then?
A memorial in
in D.C.?
No. Vacations here.
Okay.
Where they put it up. One little guy from another company, from B Company, he's only about 5'6". I don't know how he ever got in the Army. But anyway, he was going to go, and he was really the instigator getting all the money and stuff together.
Getting money together to put up a memorial to
it. It was a good deal.
Neat.
At one, what post? I think it was in Camp Cook, and our messengers were on motorcycles,
mm-hmm.
and we got a big supply in for the battalion, and the colonel says, "I want officers to drive every vehicle we have." So we're out there on these motorcycles, and the first thing. One of the lieutenants ran into a captain and broke his leg so bad that the captain had to be relieved of duty. And I was on my bike and riding around. I went into my motor sergeant, where you go to the big tanks, and I stopped to talk to him. And when I went to stop, I turned the gas the wrong way and went right through a great big door. And maybe you don't think The men always was giving me a bad time about my motorcycle experience.
Bet so. You're the chief motorcycle jockey, huh?
There was another in a C company. I was in C company before I was given a company command job. And this big sergeant from Texas, he used to call me a deserter all the time because I left that company and went to A company. I was a deserter.
You were a deserter. You deserted his company.
We had good feeling. But it was interesting. One time I had one man in the kitchen that I couldn't use him anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And one time he was getting ready to go on furlough, and I said, "Well, I says, it says here you're a legger." I says, what do you mean you're a legger?" He says, "Captain, I was a bootlegger." And after he got back, I said, "Well, how did you make it out?" He says, "When I left down there, I left my still in the creek." He says, "But it was sure all rusted up."
That's right. The bootlegging days were not too far in the past, were they?
I never noticed it. I was a legger.
Yeah, I was a legger. That's a good one. Some others.
An Indian in my company, and he was a sergeant, and in the mechanical department. But when we were in Muskogee, he went to town. He was in one of the baseball teams, and this that. And one night he came home drunk, and he did that again. So about 2 o'clock in the morning, when he came into the park, I called him into the office, into the room, mm-hmm. and we talked about it this way. And then that night, and he went and deserted.
Mm.
And about 2 months later, I got a letter from a general. He says, "You don't know how to handle men," he said.
He deserted.
Another experience was in England. The colonel told, he said, "Take one of your vehicles down to the and get it weighed before we get going."
Sure.
Up. So, of course, you drive on the wrong side of the road,
over there,
They run over this a manhole cover.
Mm.
And about 3 or 4 months after the war was on, I got a letter from this town. I owed them for one manhole cover.
So I just took it up and gave it to headquarters.
Yeah, send it forward. You put the, you take care of the manhole cover.
That's right. Oh, while you were in England, you had to drive on the left-hand side.
Yeah, yeah.
Then when you went over to France, you could go back on the right.
Back right.
Back on the right, yeah.
But it was, but anyway, when we were, when we were in Fort Dix, New Jersey, they kept postponing the time for when we were going overseas.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one night, and the PX, there was a bunch of colored guys came in there, and with working, bothering the wax, you know.
Oh yeah, good separated.
Pretty soon, we got a lot of men from the south.
Oh yeah.
And they quarantined us and had us out of there the next day because they knew what was going to happen.
That's
then
right.
When we left England to go down to get on the ship, we went through this big park, and here was all these blacks and these whites, mm-hmm. and we were combat loaded, mm-hmm. and we were afraid that there
might
be some
trouble. Yeah, that's right. It could be some problems with all.
We had nothing to lose, you know. No. On the way over.
Yeah, kids. That's right.